Coming up on the Rami LaVie podcast, we overreact to the first game in each of the NBA playoff series. The Knicks are in the playoffs and they win game one. That was fun. Also, Aaron Rodgers, it's been a month since he announced that he intends to play for the Jets and he is still not a Jet, typical Jets. Also, there is a new precedent set for starting quarterbacks and what they are guaranteed in their contracts as Jalen Hurts gets $180 million guaranteed as part of a $255 million extension to stay with the Philadelphia Eagles. There's an interesting life update in here as well. All that and a whole lot more coming up next on a longer edition of the Rami LaVie podcast. Stay tuned. One of the things I talk about on this podcast a lot is the stigma against mental health. I think, unfortunately, there has been a stigma, but we're slowly breaking it. And if you think you might be feeling depressed, stressed, anxious, overwhelmed, or maybe you just want to talk to someone, today's sponsor, BetterHelp, is here to help you. BetterHelp offers licensed therapists who are trained to listen and help. Talk to your therapist in a private online environment at your convenience. There's a broad range of expertise in BetterHelp's 20,000 plus therapist network that may not be available in your area. You just fill out a questionnaire to help access your specific needs, and then you get matched with a therapist in another 48 hours. Plus, you can exchange unlimited text messages, and everything you share is completely confidential. So I talk about on this podcast how your mindset towards things changes everything. One of the things that I learned in therapy was that join the 2 million plus people who have taken charge of their mental health with an experienced BetterHelp therapist. Get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/Rami. That's my first name. That's BetterHelp, BetterHelp.com/Rami, my first name, Rami. If you use that link, the link is in the description in the podcast notes. If you use that link, you'll get 10% off and it'll also help me out. So please do that. I'm telling you, it's worth it. Do it today. Welcome back to the Rami LaVie podcast, episode 142. This is essentially three episodes in one because it's been a while since I've talked to you guys. The last time I did come on here was the day I moved. Yes, I moved to New York, if you didn't know. And that's a whole long story, and we'll get to that a little bit later. So that's one part of the podcast. The NBA playoffs are underway, and game one overreactions from the first weekend of the NBA playoffs are in. That'll be the first part of the podcast. And then Jalen Hurts signed a huge contract extension with the Philadelphia Eagles, which we talked about earlier. We actually talked about it on one episode of the podcast so far. We talked about it on a previous episode. So how does that actually change things? Lamar is still not signed. And then finally, Aaron Rodgers is still not a Jet. The last time we talked, we were speculating that he would be. And it's been exactly a month since Aaron Rodgers announced to the world, I intend to play for the Jets. Well, if you intend to play for the Jets, what's happening? Why hasn't it happened yet? That will be another part of this podcast. So loaded, loaded episode. But I want to start with this. Right now, there are five New York sports teams in the playoffs. If you don't include Buffalo as part of that, you have the Devils playing the Rangers in the first round of the playoffs. You have the Islanders playing tonight against the Carolina Hurricanes in their first round of the hockey playoffs. So three teams in hockey. You have the Nets and you have the Knicks all in the playoffs. Winter sports was awesome in New York. It's an awesome time to be a New York sports fan. And that's why I just had to whip the microphone out and record. I'm sitting in bed right now because I don't even have a place to record yet in the new apartment. We're still figuring it out. I'm sure I'll come up with a better setup as time goes on. But a lot to talk about. Hopefully we'll get to that later on this episode, if not on an upcoming episode. But I wanted to start with the basketball, as I mentioned. The first thing I wanted to say was, let's not take it for granted that the Knicks are here. At some point in the middle of the season, you knew that the Knicks were going to be a playoff team. And I walk this fine line all the time when I do this podcast of being appreciative for the accomplishments, for overachieving, and then also telling you guys constantly that, well, expectations change. And when expectations change, we got to renew our expectations for certain things and renew how we look at certain things. Right now, I think the Knicks, you have to look at them a little bit differently. But I talked about this a little bit ago on the podcast. I'm not sure if I mentioned it in the episode that I had Jake Brown on, where everyone's like, oh, now it's a disappointment if you don't beat Cleveland in the first round. And look, Cleveland is almost 2-1 favorites in this series against the Knicks. So it would actually be an upset if the Knicks beat them. And I think that's those are the right odds. I'm not sure if the odds shifted after game one, which we'll get to in a second. But coming into this series, Cleveland has home court advantage and they have more options and they have the best player in the series. That's generally how you win a series, is you have the best player, you have home court, and you have more options and a deeper team. If you look at maybe the top four players in this series, would you say three of them are on Cleveland? Probably, between Evan Mobley, between Garland, and obviously you have Donovan Mitchell, who's the best player in this series. Now, Jalen Brunson might have something to say about that. Julius Randle might have something to say about that. The Knicks' depth seemed like it really made a difference in game one. It didn't seem like it did make a huge difference, and we'll get into all that. But let's talk about this Knicks team in general. A year ago, where this team was in shambles, right? We don't know. Are we trading all these young pieces for RJ Barrett, for Donovan Mitchell, including RJ Barrett as one of the trade pieces? What is Obi Toppin? Julius Randle, we got to run him out of town. He's giving the fans the thumbs down. He's given up on the court. This is a guy we can't bring back. We're in shambles as a franchise. They go out, they sign Jalen Brunson to this contract. Everyone laughs. Ha ha ha. You got the backup point guard from Dallas, who his only benefit was the fact that he was able to play on the floor when Luka was not on the floor. And that's why, you know, he looked so good, because he was the backup point guard to Luka Doncic. All those things, you overpaid him, blah, blah, blah. He's not a real player. And then to go from that to starting the season the way they did, where, I mean, rewind 6 months, Tom Thibodeau was going to be fired. This team, you have Evan Fournier playing 35 minutes a night. You had Derrick Rose playing 35 minutes a night. Think about 2 years ago, the last time you were in the playoffs, Alec Burks and Derrick Rose were two of your main players in that playoff series. You only won one game. But the fact that you were even in any game was because of those two guys. And think about where you've come to now, where you go into a playoff series where, as we ended up seeing in game one, you have a guy who's a real closer. You have a guy who you can rely on. I'm not saying that they're closer to winning a championship, that this team can win a championship, but I am saying that they are much more fun. And it almost was like expected. The last week of the season, after they clinched their playoff spot and they were securing their playoff spot, they rested all their starters for three games. When was the last time we had a last week of the season where we're just resting our starters as a Knicks fan? And I wouldn't take it for granted, because I don't know when the next time they're going to have this, even with Jalen Brunson on this team now, even with the emergence of Quentin Grimes and Emmanuel Quickley and all these young guys who have played so well. And by the way, Quickley, that's a huge part of this. Emmanuel Quickley might win Sixth Man of the Year in a couple of days. And the way he's played this season, the development he's had this season, after all anyone talked about was wanting to trade him, and I said every time he was on the floor, I was like, no, you can't trade him, you can't trade him. That would be the last straw. And then finally, it all clicks for him, and he puts it all together, and he turns into this incredible, well-rounded player that we've seen the last 2 months of the NBA season, and how awesome he was at times, and how he really carried the Knicks offense at times, especially when guys like Jalen Brunson and Julius Randle weren't in the game or had off nights. So to think about how far this team has come, it's hard to change the expectations and all of a sudden say, wow, this season's a disappointment if they lose in a series that they're underdogs in. I'm not saying that this is a championship caliber team. And look, would it be fun if they went on some kind of magical run, even just one round of the playoffs? We've seen in the 4-5 matchup, the 5 seed can win all the time, right? That's the one matchup in the NBA playoffs where it's really kind of a toss-up, a coin flip. So yeah, that would be fun, but I'm not going to say the season was a disappointment if they don't. They have all these pieces. They can build on this. There's going to be another disgruntled superstar. I'm not even saying they should be dying to move someone. The RJ Barrett piece is kind of interesting because he all of a sudden can't shoot, and that's a big part of this, and we'll get to that as we start to talk about the game in a second. But I think what the Knicks have done this season, the development, the growth of Tom Thibodeau as a head coach, it seemed like throughout this season, is really incredible, and it's amazing. And I'm not going to take that for granted. And I'm going to enjoy this. I might be the only person who watched the last game of the season. I might be the only person who watched the last game of the Knicks season, because it was so much fun to watch a game where it was just like a bunch of young kids on the floor with zero care, and already knowing that you made the playoffs and it doesn't matter what happens in this game. Your seeding doesn't matter. None of that matters. It's just a carefree game at Madison Square Garden with Mike and Clyde on the call and fan appreciation night. Like, I almost wanted to go to that game, and I watched every second of it because I wanted to enjoy that before I know what was going to be a grueling, tough, stressful series. I watched game one in a really interesting way, and we'll bring that up in a second because it was obviously Saturday afternoon or evening, but I couldn't watch the game because of Shabbos, and you know, I'm an observant Jew, and I could not watch the Knicks game. And I didn't want to not watch the game. I wanted to watch the game without knowing the score. And the only replay that was available, because sundown was actually right after the game ended, so generally it takes a while for the game to get uploaded, the replay of the game, to all these streaming sites. So the only version of the game that was available on ESPN Plus was the Spanish broadcast. So I watched this game in Spanish, which actually allowed me to just kind of, I didn't hear the broadcast, but it allowed me to focus on what I was seeing and not kind of have any jaded perspective from other people. Obviously, afterwards, I did go back and watch the game a second time with Mike and Clyde on the call, because just with the way the game went with the way the game ended. I tried to say went and ended at the same time, said when did. Just with the way the game went and ended, I wanted to hear Mike and Clyde call that, because that's one of the special parts about having Knicks playoffs, is having those two guys be able to call your games. My number one takeaway, RJ stunk. He can easily shoot the team out of a game. He started jacking up jump shots early when they went up 9-2, and he shoots, I think, two or three threes in a row. It's like, oh my God, he might shoot them out of this game. He needs to get to the rim, but Tibbs didn't let him. Tibbs immediately pulled him, and we'll talk about Tibbs and his rotation a little bit more later on. And he needs to keep doing what he was doing, what he was successful at the end of the season, which was getting to the rim. He was so good at shots and close. He was so good at finishing around the rim. And it opens up things for everyone else. He's actually a great passer once he breaks down the defense and gets inside. He's good at those passes down low, not kicking it out necessarily, but those passes down low to the rolling big when he gets doubled. He's really good at those, whether it's a cut to the basket by Hart or Julius or anyone, Grimes, or it's a rolling big like Hartenstein or Mitchell Robinson or Obi Toppin. That's where he can thrive. I think he can still thrive with the second unit, but he got pulled so early in that first quarter because you can't allow him to think, okay, I'm going to just start chucking threes. That's not good. Julius was very good early, and he had to be because Brunson was in foul trouble. He actually picks up his third foul with 9 minutes to go in the first half and doesn't play a single minute in the first half. And Julius Randle really carried the offense at that point. Although we do trust Emmanuel Quickley to run the second unit, Emmanuel Quickley in this game, while he was successful at running the second unit, and I thought it looked fine from an eye test perspective, if you look at the box score, obviously Emmanuel Quickley was ineffective. In the game, he had 3 points, 2 assists, 3 rebounds in 24 minutes, and he was 0 for 5 from the field, 0 for 2 from 3. All 3 points that he had were free throws. So Emmanuel Quickley and I had the same total number of field goals made in this game. And anyone who has the same number of field goals made as me, who was sitting in Michigan watching the game on delay, that's a problem, as you can imagine. So Emmanuel Quickley, I still trust he'll get better. And we'll get to what all this means in a second. Julius, by the way, bullied Mobley. There was a bunch of those videos going around, and somebody talked about this before the game. Mobley is an excellent perimeter defender. So Julius was able to kind of drag him out to the perimeter to open up the inside and open up the paint for Jalen Brunson to go to work. But then on the other side, he was punishing him. Remember the first two plays, I think it was the first two buckets that Cleveland got were incredible plays. I think it was an offensive rebound by Mobley and then another play by Mobley where he just looked awesome and he got 4 points right away. It looked like, oh my God, Mobley's going to be a huge factor in this game. As you expected, he's going to be a huge factor in the series. And then he does get 11 rebounds, but he only has 2 assists and only 8 points in 38 minutes. Evan Mobley only made 4 of his attempted 13 shots. He didn't get to the free throw line. He didn't shoot any threes. And maybe part of that was him being worn down on the other end by Julius Randle. And that was something that was interesting. Julius, even if he wasn't contributing, like he didn't really to close the game or in the second half, and I get it, he was gassed after not playing in 17 days. Even if he's not contributing on the offensive side of the floor, he's going to understand that he has a huge role to play for this team, especially against a team that has two bigs like Allen and Mobley. Him playing bully ball, he's much stronger than Evan Mobley is. He can bully that guy, and that's going to be a huge part of this. And by the way, Julius Randle played within himself, played in check. He didn't force it. He wasn't trying to get himself over-involved in everything. He knows he hasn't played in almost 3 weeks. He didn't have any out-of-control possessions, either physically or emotionally, like we see he has sometimes. There were no bad ISO possessions. There was kind of one at the end of the game, one of those last possessions, but we'll talk about those possessions in a second. Other than that, Julius Randle was in control the entire game, and that's key. That's going to be key for him to play within himself throughout the series, especially if he's not 100% healthy. Donovan Mitchell on the other side was fantastic. His 38 points actually felt like more. His step back threes, every time the Knicks went on a run, it felt like the Cavs hit threes, right? They hit a couple threes, whether it was Dean Wade, whoever it was, it felt like hit a big three. Osman, I think, hit a big three at one point. Most of them were by Donovan Mitchell. But then you look at the box score, it's like, well, Cleveland only had 10 threes on 31 attempts, and the Knicks were 8 of 29. So it's almost like not as many threes as you'd expect to go down for Cleveland did go down, but it did feel like every time the Knicks started to pull away, Cleveland did hit a big three. The other things that Mitchell was doing, he was flying in to get his own rebounds. He was all over the place. His 38 points felt more impactful, especially in a low-scoring game like it was. Cleveland only scores 97 points, and 38 of them are by Donovan Mitchell. His 38 felt even more impactful. I still think he's going to have a 50-burger at some point in this series. But the point is, it's not like he was a non-factor in this game. And then the final thing was Jalen Brunson. Brunson closing out, and there's a couple other things. I don't know why I said final thing. But Jalen Brunson closing out, that was one of the most unbelievable takeaways. I don't know if it was because he was fresh and everyone else was tired. Obviously, Cleveland played a ton of minutes. We'll talk about that in a second. Played their top guys a ton of minutes. He only played 29 minutes in this game, but in the second half, in the fourth quarter, every time the Knicks needed a bucket, it was him, and he knew exactly what he wanted to do, whether he was spinning in the paint down low, whether he was hitting that floater, the step-back jumper, or even the step-back three over Jared Allen on the wing right in front of the Cavs bench. That was awesome. Every play, he was in control. He knew exactly what he wanted to do, and he looked like a real NBA superstar closing a game. And one thing I noticed was Rick Brunson. Rick Brunson, I've watched the Knicks all year. I've watched almost every single Knick game. And I watched the bench. I'm a big body language doctor. I went to a lot of games so that I can observe the bench and see how this team is interacting with each other. And Rick Brunson was not the loudest guy on the bench. He usually sits in the second row with the assistant coaches and is relatively quiet. He was jumping out on the floor. He was the first guy off the floor or onto the court to greet each off the bench onto the court to greet the Knicks whenever there was a big bucket by Jalen Brunson in particular. And that's such a special thing about sports, having his dad there. He, you know, with all the rumors and all the talk going on about how he could have gone back to Dallas, maybe he should have gone to all that stuff, he didn't go back to Dallas, and now he's with his dad in New York, and his father jumping off the bench and having that connection is so cool. A couple other takeaways. There were some huge Hartenstein minutes in this game from Isaiah Hartenstein. That was awesome. He had obviously the two huge offensive rebounds at the end. And by the way, this was something that you only heard on the Spanish broadcast, and we'll get to the possessions late in the game, but you only heard this on the Spanish broadcast. I actually went back when I said I watched the MSG broadcast. You didn't hear this because they use a different camera angle. I don't know if on the regular MSG broadcast they had this, but I was like, my ears were listening out for any English words when I was watching the Spanish broadcast, so I could get more of a feel for this game, because I don't speak a word of Spanish. And there was a point during one of the final timeouts where you just hear Tibbs yelling, "Everyone rebound! Everyone rebound!" And right after that comes the Isaiah Hartenstein rebound where he tips it out, and obviously the Julius Randle huge offensive rebound. That's the biggest rebound of the game. It's the biggest play of the game, in my opinion, is the Julius Randle offensive rebound, but we'll talk about the end of the game. I talked about the late rotations. Look, Josh Hart is incredible, and Josh Hart is so special and what he adds to this team and everything he does, but you're not expecting him to score or do much offensively. Obviously, he had the biggest shot of this game, the three-pointer that he had. Obviously, he was scoring a ton in this game, and he was contributing on the offensive end a lot more than you would expect. But still, some of those possessions looked really ugly. And shout out to Tibbs for realizing that, because he brought in Hartenstein for Robinson. Hartenstein gives you a little bit more scoring. He had that flip shot from like in the paint, maybe 10 feet away. That's big. He also brought in Grimes instead of Barrett. You can't have Barrett and Robinson and Hart on the floor at the same time. None of them can shoot. You need to find a way to spread the floor. You saw how it opened up the floor later when Julius is on the wing, and that way that opens up a lane on the left side for Brunson to get to the rim. All that stuff is important. You need shooters. Otherwise, they just pack the paint with their two big men, and Brunson can't do anything, and he can't kick it out to shooters either, because those guys aren't going to hit their shots, especially Barrett and obviously Mitchell Robinson. And usually you can't rely on Hart to hit his jumpers either, although he did hit the biggest jumper of the game. I keep going back to that. But a great job by Tibbs not being stubborn. And this is something that was a problem with Tibbs. He was not stubborn. He went to Grimes. And the thing is, he had to go to Hartenstein as opposed to just going small, right? He could have gone small and gone to Grimes and quickly, but in this series in particular, where you have Jared Allen and you have Evan Mobley, you can't go small against that team because of the two Cleveland bigs and how good they are. So it was just an excellent adjustment by Tibbs late in the game. The Knicks defense, I thought, was incredible. They were swarming. They had energy early. They kept trapping the pick and roll, which was so cool to watch. They kept going up top and trapping the pick and roll and creating fast breaks the other way, and then rotating when they didn't trap the pick and roll, when they weren't able to, you know, when they got the ball, when Cleveland was able to move the ball out of the pick and roll, the Knicks were rotating to the open shooters. Like I said, Cleveland still did get a lot of open shots, but as long as they're not falling down, I can't complain too much. A lot of people are talking about the bench, how the Knicks bench outplayed the Cleveland bench by a mile, but I really don't put too much on the bench because of how many minutes the Cleveland starters played versus Hartenstein and Hart, who came off the bench for the Knicks, and how many minutes they played off the bench. And they were part of the closing unit, where I don't think there was anyone off the bench for Cleveland who was really part of that closing unit. But you talk about the last few possessions of the game, and this is where I think things are finally different for the Knicks, and things are finally different this year, and why I think this year is a success regardless of what happens in this series. After going down one, I had zero faith. They go down one with about 1:50 left in the game, right? A minute 50 left in the game, something like that. They go down 1 point after the Jared Allen putback, and it's like, it's over. They're down one. They call timeout. They had a lead throughout the game. It was as big as 11. It felt like they were in control the whole time, but every time they were kind of were running away a little bit, Cleveland went on a run, and finally that run was the straw that broke the camel's back. Let me take you through their seven possessions that happened after that point. From that point forward, there are seven possessions that closed out the game after they went down one. The first possession is the broken possession. They're trying to get the ball to Brunson desperately. Josh Hart looks up, notices the shot clock winding down, does this little crossover move, and shoots a line drive three that I never thought was going to go in. No one thought it was going to go in. You get a Mike Breen bang on the call. I knew I was watching the Spanish call. First, I was shocked that it went in. Then I'm like, oh my God, Mike Breen for sure gave us a nice bang there. The Knicks go up by two. Knicks fans are so funny. I saw a Knicks fan on Twitter overlaid that with the Jordan step back against Utah in the finals. Obviously, the most famous Jordan step back jumper in the finals. Some of them are taking it seriously. Some Knicks Twitter, some Knicks fans know that they're being funny and they're overreacting to game one. I appreciate both sides, though. I think it's just funny to observe both sides. Either way, the Knicks go up one with the most unlikely three ever. The Cavs come the other way, or the Knicks rather go up two. The Cavs come the other way. Mitchell actually gets an open look at three this time. He misses it, and Hart flies in for the rebound. He gets undercut actually by Donovan Mitchell. So Donovan Mitchell, like I said, he was chasing his own offensive rebounds. That shot could have gone down. It was an open three. That's one of the threes that I talk about, that if that shot goes down, this game is entirely different. The Cavs go back up by one, and who knows what happens from there. But instead, the Knicks maintain the two-point lead, and obviously Josh Hart gets fouled. Then they come down the other end. That's when, this is the third possession, Jalen Brunson hits that step back mid-range jumper, makes it a four-point game with 1:15 remaining, at which point the Knicks have their second to worst defensive possession of the game, in my opinion. Grimes fouls Mitchell, which it wasn't a terrible foul because it was 10 seconds in. They're not in the bonus yet, but Mitchell, smart, gets him on his hip, and this is the new move. He gets Grimes on his hip, on his side, and then he throws his arms into Grimes. He throws his body into Grimes and throws his hands up to get the foul and to get it called in the shooting motion. So he goes to the line for two, makes it a two-point game again, and the possession only lasts in the end 10 seconds. I think that should have been side out, but either way, it's not a great defensive possession for the Knicks. You give them an easy two at the free throw line to cut it back to a two-point game, and it only takes 10 seconds of the clock. And then this is another extremely messy possession for the Knicks. The Knicks come the other way. The ball ends up in Hart's hands. This was the possession, I'm pretty sure, that Randall was kind of stuck in an ISO with two on him on the right wing, kind of in the right corner. And the Knicks had, or the Cleveland, I should say, did excellent ball denial the entire, like late in that game. They were trying to deny the ball from Jalen Brunson, and the Knicks had a really tough time getting the ball to Brunson. Once they got it to him, he was able to do a lot, but the way they were able to get the ball to Brunson, Hart misses the layup, but Hartenstein just sticks his arm out and pokes it out for the offensive rebound, a huge offensive rebound, like I mentioned, after Tibbs talked about getting rebounds and everyone just crashing the boards. He just sticks his arm in and gets that loose ball. Loose balls never went the Knicks' way earlier in the season, and it feels like since Hart and Hart, well, since Hart showed up and since Hartenstein really started developing and becoming a key part of this rotation, as he's really become one of the better players and one of the better pieces of this Knicks rotation. Since that's happened, the Knicks seem to be getting all these 50-50 balls. And in this case, they get it in the hands because it's a broken possession, because it's an offensive rebound. They get it in the hands of Brunson. He drives to the rim, gets the floater to go off glass with 35 seconds remaining. Timeout Cleveland, 4-point game. At that point, Brunson had 4 consecutive points. Obviously, the step back mid-range jumper and that layup to make it, or I guess it was a floater to make it 4-point game with 35 seconds left. And then comes the worst Knicks possession. Out of the timeout, Cleveland comes down the court. They inbound in the front court and they go right to the rim and they get an easy Jared Allen dunk on an assist. I think it was an alley-oop or just a pass inside from Donovan Mitchell. It takes only 4 seconds for them to get a bucket right at the rim. I don't understand that at all. I get denying the three. I get not fouling, but that was just an awful, awful defensive possession, and it could have really come back to hurt the Knicks because now there's only 31 seconds left. There's still 31 seconds left. You can't run out the clock. If you're the Knicks, you can't just dribble it out and get fouled. If you make them take 7 seconds off the clock in that spot, 8 seconds off the clock in that spot, or I guess 10, then they have to foul at that point because the Knicks only, there's only 23 seconds left in the game. But instead, the Knicks allowed them to use only 4 seconds. Now there's 31 seconds. There's a 7.5 second difference between the shot clock and game clock. And now the Knicks only up 2, need another possession that results in a basket. So with 31 seconds, Brunson has the ball. He milks the clock all the way down, but misses the pull-up jumper. And then Randle has the biggest play of the game, the offensive rebound, quickly gets it to Grimes. The Cavs, for some reason, didn't foul right away. They seemed unaware, and this was not a great game from JB Bickerstaff. My father said something funny. He's like, let's hope that Bickerstaff is just not a good coach, because it seems like there are some easy adjustments he can make here, and this team would be a lot better than they were, and I agree with my father on that, but they do foul Grimes. They let the clock wind down to all the way down to 4 seconds. They foul Grimes. He hits both free throws. And then I guess technically the 8th possession is Mitchell comes the other way, throws his body into Grimes again as he's heaving the last second shot, which Clyde mentioned on the Knicks broadcast afterwards. I listened to the MSG broadcast. He's like, you shouldn't have been anywhere close to him. You should have been running into the locker room. He's like, 4 seconds left. The Cavs don't have a timeout and you're up 4. Just run into the locker room. The game is over. There's no reason to be hanging out anymore. If that would have gotten called a foul on Grimes, that would have been ridiculous. Obviously, it doesn't. The shot doesn't go, and the game is over. Here's why I mention these possessions, and I talk about these possessions specifically, and I went possession by possession on the last 8 possessions, which is about the last 2 minutes of game time in this game. The Knicks have played in games like this all season long. They went through their streaks where they were losing them, and they went through their streaks where they were winning them. At the beginning of the season, they lost a lot of them. Lately, they've been figuring out ways to win them, and it's been mostly because of Brunson. But if they're going to want to continue to win games in this series, they're going to have to figure out their half-court offense late in games. Look, you can't just be all Brunson every single time coming down the floor. I don't know if that means you get IQ in the game, if you get Grimes out there, whoever you put out there. Can Randle play off-ball and be a playmaker, or be a playmaker with the ball without dribbling into a double team and spinning and losing it? Like, what can happen? What other things can you do down the stretch of the games that's not ISO for Brunson that leads to a bucket? What else can they do? I don't know if you're going to need to do anything else because of how awesome Brunson was, but you're going to need, I don't think that's sustainable. And what else can they do? Is it quickly? Is it Grimes? Is Hart always going to be out there in those spots? I know how valuable he is. Can they figure out a way to go small and still have enough size out there? Can you get rebounds with Hart and Randle without a real big out there? It's going to be interesting to see what happens, but I actually trust that Tibbs will make an adjustment despite the fact that they won those possessions. I mean, some of the ugliest possessions led to some of the biggest buckets in the game, and I don't think that's necessarily a positive thing. For the Cavs, the way they have to look at this, number one, Mitchell's body language when he's not involved, which is every defensive possession, usually just stands in the corner. He's slumping his shoulders. I saw a camera angle where after maybe the Randle rebound or after the Hartenstein rebound, one of those two offensive rebounds, he just kind of slumps his shoulders and rolls his eyes. He wasn't in there. He was standing on the wing, waiting for one of his guys to get a rebound. And then he kind of slumps his shoulders when he sees the Knicks got the offensive rebound. They played big minutes for all their top guys. This was a big talking point for everyone, and I get why. Mitchell plays 44 minutes. He played the entirety of the second half. Garland plays 43. Allen plays 43. Mobley plays 38. So huge minutes for their top guys. Wouldn't it have been nice to have Kevin Love? You know that Kevin Love would have been out there at the end of this game, knocking down threes, getting rebounds for them, boxing out, just being a veteran savvy guy. And it's crazy that they gave him up for nothing the way they did. Like I talked about with Bickerstaff, if they adjust, they have more talent. The Cavs have more talent than the Knicks. And if they make the adjustments, the proper adjustments, then it seems like they should beat them. But again, there seems to not be a depth there. And the Knicks have the depth with Hart and Hartenstein off the bench, obviously with Quickly off the bench. Even Obi Toppin played some really solid minutes for the Knicks off the bench. Mobley getting worn out by Julius Randle. I don't think Mobley's going to shoot 4-for-13 again. But does it make him less effective if Randle's bullying him the entire time? I think so. And so that could be a huge thing to watch in this series. So even if Randle's not scoring a ton or not doing a ton offensively, can the Knicks kind of knock Mobley out of this series because of how he's built in his first playoff series? That's an interesting thing to watch. Or can Mobley figure out a way to be effective while getting kind of like just manhandled from a body perspective? Spider Mitchell and Darius Garland are both individually great, but they don't play complementary team basketball, or at least they didn't in game one. I know they can do that, but in game one, they didn't. And that's the interesting part. All the amazing plays, everything that Donovan Mitchell did in that game, it all seemed to be individually great. And I'm kind of curious to see if he can parlay that into helping the team win. And that's going to be interesting. Now, the flip side for this, for the Cavs, the positive in all this, is all these can change. Every single one of these things. Mobley can just go off. He was awful in game one. If he just goes off all of a sudden, that you've unlocked the second to best player in the series, maybe. Garland can have a much better game. Mitchell can be getting his teammates involved. And by the way, 38 points can turn into 58 points in a heartbeat if you're Donovan Mitchell. All that can change in a second. And that's where the Cavs know that they can't overreact. It's just one game. And what if they do make the proper adjustments? You know, what actually happens? We didn't see anything from Okoro in this game either. Like, he barely did anything. He had 6 points in this game in 23 minutes. If there's an adjustment there to be made that could get him more involved in this game, if they start knocking down some of those threes. So it seems like there's an arrow pointing up for Cleveland, and I expect Cleveland to come out and play much better in game two and the rest of this series. The only thing I still can't get over is the Kevin Love thing. How do you just let him walk for nothing? He hits like 9 threes for Miami in their game also, and he would have just been huge. As far as the Knicks, let's go for the Knicks and see where they can go to from this series or from this game for the rest of the series. They have a bad RJ Barrett game. They have a kind of a bad Emmanuel Quickly game, right? He doesn't hit a single shot. They had minimal Julius Randle, right? Because it's his first game in 17 days. He only plays 33 minutes. You have foul trouble in the first half for Jalen Brunson, and somehow you kind of held on. He only plays 29 minutes in the game total, right? Donovan Mitchell kind of went off on them, even though it was only 38 points. He still kind of went off. And with all that, the Knicks still win, and they barely even had anything from Quentin Grimes. He has 5 points. He hits 1-3 and then knocks down those two free throws. So that seems like a positive for the Knicks. You have all those things go against you, and you still win game one on the road. The downside for the Knicks, obviously, is their worst three offensive possessions of the game led to the three biggest buckets of the game. If you think about it, obviously, you have the Hart three was the biggest bucket of the game for the Knicks, and you have those two Brunson plays where it's like those were two bad offensive possessions. One, you get an offensive rebound from Hartenstein, and the other one, I guess the last one you want to talk about before the free throws, where you get the offensive rebound from Randle. I'm not diminishing those. I think, yeah, you can't take that away from the Knicks. Those offensive rebounds were something they worked on, but at the same time, you can't rely on those possessions to be getting you buckets. At the same time, Tibbs is not going to be stubborn with the rotation. We saw that. As long as everyone's giving effort, everyone's trapping the way they were on defense, and being able to rotate to the shooters, another reason why Kevin Love would be huge, because he would just be able to be a guy that, you know, they wouldn't be quick enough to rotate to. I mean, there's a lot of things to like for the Knicks, but I still think after one game where the Knicks didn't play their best game, I think the Cavs definitely didn't play their best game. There's still a lot that's going to happen before this series is said and done. It's going to be a dogfight. I'd imagine Cleveland finds a way to tie up the series at one before going to Madison Square Garden. And then who knows what's going to happen. Donovan Mitchell's probably going to go off at the Garden. But it's going to be fun. I can't wait for tomorrow night for game two. I'm just going to enjoy it. Like I said, I'm just going to try and enjoy it. All right, we have the first game and all the first round matchups. And what we like to do is overreact to game one of the playoffs, the first weekend of the playoffs. Let's overreact a little bit. I want to start with Phoenix and the Clippers. So I noticed this late in the game. I hope everyone else did too. DeAndre Ayton was over-involved in the offense late in this game. There was no one who should have been shooting the ball other than Kevin Durant. And it seemed like Kevin Durant was just not assertive, not taking command. You had that last weird possession where Devin Booker goes to the rim and gets it thrown off his own leg while he's complaining to the ref. Like, it's just so weird. Maybe it's because they haven't played together. Maybe Kevin Durant's still just trying to let everyone else get theirs. But Kevin Durant, him not being the assertive superstar that he should be in this situation, is just a weird situation. Kevin Durant should be demanding that he takes those last shots, that he takes more shots down the stretch. Mid-range jumpers from DeAndre Ayton off of like a pick and pop, that doesn't make sense to me. Obviously, you had Chris Paul bricking shots all night long. And then that last possession from Devin Booker just didn't make sense at all to me. They lose that game. Kawhi Leonard was awesome in this game. He went toe for toe. It was almost like, hey, this is me versus KD. I'm going to go at him. I'm going to try and win this game on my own. And at certain points, it felt like he was doing it on his own until Russell Westbrook comes in and closes it out. This is as good a game as I've seen in a couple of years from Russell Westbrook. He comes in and he closes it out with offensive rebounds, with hustle on defense, and not needing to be the guy on offense, not taking mid-range jumpers, not holding the ball and isolating. There were so many winning plays that Russell Westbrook made in this game that I didn't even think he had left in him. If he can be that guy for another few games, for another few weeks, who knows how far the Clippers can go. I don't think Booker's a winning player. When you have a player who scores 70 in a game and lost that game and just grew up with so much winning and came into the league with so much winning, it's hard to become a winning player. And you saw that on that last possession. He's complaining as the ball is getting thrown off of him. And there are just certain things that you see that seems like he isn't a winning player. Now, I do think Phoenix will win the series. And I think they do have the best path to the finals because they just have too much talent and they have Kevin Durant. Assuming Durant stays healthy, I don't see a way that anyone else in the Western Conference beats them, if I'm being honest. But they're so frustrating to watch. Like, I had money on them. I was not rooting for them. I wanted to root for them because I wanted to win my bet. And yet, I couldn't bring myself to root for Phoenix in this game just because they were so frustrating to watch at times, this team. It's really weird. It's kind of reminiscent of Brooklyn. Maybe that's just because it's Kevin Durant, but it feels like a bunch of like quasi alphas who are kind of all really talented, but not playing together and all think they're the best guy on the floor at certain times, but also not willing to take over and take command. It's just a weird, weird, weird situation going on right now. It seems to me in Phoenix, I don't doubt that the talent will shine through. And I do trust Monty Williams that he can unlock this somehow, but they're going to have to figure it out soon. They're already down 1-0, but this is why it's the overreactions. Let's overreact. Let's think the Clippers are going to win this series. Miami and Milwaukee. So Giannis is hurt. I don't know what the Giannis injury is going to look like long term. Can Miami win this series? They're up 1-0 already. Obviously, Hero breaks his hand. I think somebody at some point, I think it was Reggie Miller, said on the broadcast that's a bigger injury than Giannis. Giannis to the Bucks is smaller. I don't think that's true at all. I picked Giannis and the Bucks to win the championship only because of Giannis. And I thought they were going to come out of the East only because of Giannis. And now if Giannis is out, I don't even think they can win the series. They still should win this series. They are a better team. But I don't know. This series might end up going six more games. And these two teams are just going to beat each other up for six more games. And the Knicks are getting, or the Knicks or Cavs, I already put the Knicks in the second round, classic Knicks fan, after one game putting the Knicks in the second round. But the Knicks or Cavs are getting this team, and whoever gets the winner of this series is going to get a beat-up team after a seven-game series, especially if Giannis doesn't come back soon. And they're going to get them beat up and injured, and that's going to be a huge advantage for whoever plays them in the second round. It's really a bigger advantage for Brooklyn, or I should say for Philly and Boston on the other side. So speaking of Philly, they're playing Brooklyn. And they finally have the shooting to go on a run. We know with Ben Simmons out there, everyone tried to convince us Ben Simmons can play with Joel Embiid. It's not true. They couldn't play together. You needed shooting around Embiid to maximize what Embiid can do. Brooklyn was content with doubling Embiid the whole game, and Embiid was perfectly fine with just finding the open shooters and kicking it out to Harden and letting Harden be the playmaker. And Harden was that guy in this game. He was the playmaker. He was the shooter. He was doing everything. The shooters for Philly stepped up in this game. They knocked down 21 threes in this game, and that's how they won, and that's how they're going to keep winning. And people talk about Brooklyn. Like, I'm rooting for Brooklyn, which is weird for me because I hate the Nets, right? But now that they're kind of the underdog and they have Bridges and they're kind of that fun team again, I'm rooting for them, especially against Philly. It would kind of be funny if they ended up knocking off Philly. But Ben Simmons isn't even playing in this series, which is also kind of funny. I would love to see him playing in Philly and how he reacts, but obviously he's not playing in Philly in this playoff series. And I think people forget Brooklyn's actually really bad. Their record is, the fact that they got the sixth seed is only because of the start to the season that they had with Kevin Durant. They were under 500 since Durant was traded. And so this is not a very good team. They're not even in the same league as the Philadelphia 76ers, and the Sixers should sweep them. Denver and Minnesota, I really have nothing to say about that series because I think Denver, rightfully so, should dominate that series. Same with Boston and Atlanta. Boston should crush Trae Young, and we'll have a Trae Young conversation maybe after the season or at some point during the playoffs, not today. My biggest takeaway from obviously the Lakers and Memphis, aside from the fact that, I mean, it just sucks for Memphis. You have this fun season and it kind of goes down the drain. You have so many injuries. And then now you have Ja Morant after he was out with his absence. He comes back. It's like, oh, we're ready for the playoff run. And then he gets hurt in this game, and who knows how long he's going to be out for. Jaren Jackson was awesome in this game. I wanted to see more of him. Like, LeBron couldn't stop him. He was manhandling LeBron down low on both sides of the floor. So I kind of like that. Anthony Davis is not going to stop getting hurt. He keeps getting these nagging injuries and whatever it is. I feel like every game he's going to go back to the locker room eventually a few times. LeBron in this game was interesting. He was kind of floating. Like, he was shooting threes. He was facilitating from the outside, not playing any defense. Like, he didn't assert himself in this game. It felt like at any point, like, he needed, and he didn't really need to, right? So he still has, like, the big clutch plays. Like, he had a deep three. He has a chase down block, obviously. But he's letting Reeves and Rui Hachimura take over this game, and they did. Like, what they did in this game, especially Austin Reeves down the stretch, was awesome. But can they do that for three more games in this series? Can they do that for another round or two? And by the way, credit to LeBron. I mean, the answer is no. But credit to LeBron in this game. He's like, hey, I don't have to be the guy in this game. I know there's going to be games in the series where I'm going to have to be the guy. I know there's going to be games if we make a run in these playoffs where AD is going to have to be that guy. Let's let Reeves cook. He's cooking right now. So credit to LeBron for not forcing himself into this game down the stretch. Like, I would be hating on LeBron right now if he inserted himself into this game when after Reeves was cooking, if LeBron tried to overforce himself into this game. He got out of the way and let Reeves do his thing. And that was the right move. That pick and roll with him and Rui was working over and over again, or him and AD, it didn't matter, was working over and over again. So why should LeBron over-insert himself into this game and risk messing up what was working? And that's a good job by LeBron not to do that. It's a good job by LeBron to realize what was happening here and make the right basketball decisions, knowing that he's not the same guy physically, and there's going to be games down the stretch that he's going to need to be heavily leaned on if the Lakers are going to win. So that's a good job to kind of steal a game where he doesn't have to do that. And I don't know. I kind of like this team right now, the pieces that they have on this team. I'm curious to see how far they can go. I know that Memphis is really hurt and it's only one game, but this is why it's the overreactions. The other thing I want to talk about on this episode, and call me the old man, everyone can get angry at me, I'm out on the him thing. I know Austin Reeves was awesome in this game and everyone's going, oh, he's him. I feel like the he's him thing started with guys who are kind of like borderline superstars or guys who are budding superstars, and we weren't sure if they are full superstars, and we're like, is he a superstar? Yeah, he's him. Like, he's really one of those legit guys. Now it feels like every time the ninth best player in your rotation on a team that's middle of the pack in the NBA scores 25 points in a game or hits a three at the end of one of the quarters that beats the buzzer, he's yelling, I'm him. Why? Because you hit a random shot, because you put up 25 points in an NBA game, which anyone can do these days. Literally, you could take a G Leaguer, bring them up for a game, and they'll probably score 35 points in an NBA game if they shot the ball enough and they got enough space. Like, I'm out on it. It's overused. I liked it at the beginning. I like it in theory. It got way too overused, way too quickly. I'm totally out on it right now. I don't need Austin Reeves yelling, "I'm him," after he's going off. Although I respect the fact that he went off. I love that game. Sacramento and Golden State. This is the last series that we did not get to. It seems like it's all Steph. It's the Steph show. And I talked to my father about this. Like, Klay Thompson, like, he's just not the same guy. And it's so funny. Like, you think, like, the athleticism goes at some point. And my father calls it old man game. Klay Thompson had old man game. I don't understand why he's ineffective if he had old man game to begin with. But I guess it just goes to show you how talented these guys still are, how incredible and how athletic you have to be to have quote unquote old man game in the NBA. And so, look, that was, it's going to be Steph. And it was awesome. Like, Sacramento makes the playoffs. This is typical Sacramento because they make the playoffs for the first time in 20 years. The place is rocking. The place is going nuts. And they have to face Steph, and Steph is just going off. And you think, like, oh my God, they're going to lose this game because Steph is just going to do something incredible. They have everyone else beat in the series. Wiggins is rusty. He hasn't played. No one knows why, but he hasn't played in 3 months. Draymond Green doesn't do anything offensively. Poole is kind of in and out with what he's doing. DiVincenzo, all these guys, you don't know what you're getting from them on a night-to-night basis. And then you just have Steph Curry going off. The sad part is one of these two teams is going to lose this series. But when I look at this, I don't want to lose Steph Curry in the playoffs. I don't want him to be out after only a week or two. It would be fun to have him for the rest of this postseason because of how fun he was in that game. It would also be fun to have that Sacramento crowd in the postseason for the next round, obviously. But when I look at the two teams and I look at the depth and I look at all the, you know, the smack we talked about Sacramento specifically after they traded Tyrese Halliburton for Domantas Sabonis. Welcome to the tribe, by the way. Domantas Sabonis, my newest favorite Jew. But him, De'Aaron Fox, Monk, what they were able to do in this game, you know there's going to be a Herder game or two at some point in these playoffs, probably in this series. All that stuff is awesome. I think they're a really fun team, and having that crowd behind them is really fun. This is probably going to be the most fun series of the first round. I think for the long-term benefit, and by the way, this is a little side rant when you talk about underdogs. Everyone loves underdogs until you get to the Final Four, and there's three teams that are like, what the hell is this? And they're going to get blown out by UConn, and nobody's watching the games. The numbers were down for the Final Four this year in March Madness. Why? Because we had too many underdogs win. We had too many upsets. Everyone loves these upsets until you have to watch them for another game and you realize that they're not that good. The same thing here. It's fun to watch Steph Curry go off, and I want to watch Steph Curry as much as possible. And if they make it out of this round, maybe there's a way where they find a way to gel. It's pretty much the same guys as last year, and they figure it out, and they go on a run, and they go on one of the most magical finals runs ever. It would be if they figure out a way to do that this year. It would be even more magical than last year, obviously. But all that said, I don't see that happening. And watching Steph Curry do everything for this team while the rest of the team just struggles at times, and the rest of the team is hard to watch, quite frankly, at times, I think I'd rather watch Sacramento, if I'm being honest. Last thing in the NBA, the Dallas situation. Look, the reason this is different than any other tanking, but other teams were tanking only a week earlier and we had no problem with it. They had a chance to make the playoffs. The point is, you have a player as talented as Luka Doncic. You have Luka Doncic as a generational talent that can win you games on your own, that can win you series on your own like you did last year. And you chose the potential draft pick over having a shot of seeing that guy in a playoff series. That's why they're, you know, that's why it's so terrible. And a $750,000 fine means nothing to Mark Cuban, because if you told him, hey, you will have to pay here, you can tank, you're allowed to tank, but you'll have to pay $750,000 to tank, he would gladly take that and say yes and then tank anyway. So that's not good enough. I hope they lose the pick somehow. I hope the NBA fixes it or whatever. But the one consolation, and not even because it's the Knicks, people are going to say, oh, you're a Knicks fan, you want the pick. I do want the pick. But at the same time, it's nothing to do with that. It's different than any other tanking, because tanking, okay, you understand teams at the bottom jostling for the worst record so that they get the best pick. That's one thing. But a team that has a chance to make the playoffs, and theoretically, you're undermining the whole playoffs, because theoretically, if you have a player, especially a player as good as Luka Doncic, if you make it, if you get in, then guess what? You have a chance, right? That's the point. All you need is a ticket to the dance, and then you got a chance. he undermined everything about that. And this is a guy who complains constantly about tanking and about other teams not having integrity and the officials not having integrity. And you're the same guy. How could you have those complaints and show zero integrity? So I'm sorry. I'm not upset for you. I'm not angry for you. I hope you get the pick taken away. And I'm also happy that Jalen Brunson is playing the way he did after you let him walk. And it looks like you're really dumb as a owner / general manager, whatever you are, Mark Cuban. And by the way, Luka's going to leave you too. So I hope you get what's coming to you, Mark Cuban. All right. As I mentioned, it's a fun time in New York sports for the winter sports. I can't talk about baseball because of my job. We'll talk about that a little bit later. I've already gone on for 48 minutes, so there's a decision to be made here. Do I talk about Aaron Rodgers? Do I do a part two of this episode? Do I drop this episode right now and then do a part two? I think I'm going to do that. And I'll talk about my life in part two. So stay tuned for that coming up. More on the Rami Levy podcast coming up next. All right, this is part two. Here we go. I'm going to keep it in the same episode, even though it's going to make the episode look mighty long. I just went back and forth in my head, and I decided to keep it as one episode. It's still two parts, right? I stopped recording, I edited, I did a bunch of stuff, and then I came back and I'm recording again, but I'm going to release the episode all at once. This part of the podcast will hopefully be a little bit quicker. I just want to talk about a couple of things, some personal stuff, and obviously let's start with some football stuff. Jalen Hurts, as I mentioned in the open, signed a huge extension today, but the Jets are still waiting on their quarterback, Aaron Rodgers. Last time I spoke to you, it was a month ago when Rodgers said he intends on playing for the Jets. And at that moment, I was like, oh my God, Aaron Rodgers will be a Jet. But I wrote this down at the moment. I'll believe it when I see it. So I want to go through what that was like for me. First, I've been a huge Jets fan my whole life. But I've been an equally big Aaron Rodgers fan. Just to set this up for you. Obviously, when the Jets were great, the Jets were doing really well. They go to back-to-back AFC Championship games. I have a good friend at that point in high school, or I guess it was the last year of middle school, first year of high school, who is a big Packer fan. And the Jets obviously lose to the Steelers in the second AFC Championship game, and they end up playing the Packers. And I hated the Steelers because of how they beat the Jets and Ben Roethlisberger. So I'm rooting for the Packers, and that's when I first fell in love with Aaron Rodgers. And to me, what's so special about Aaron Rodgers is he's Peyton Manning pre-play. Like, everything he does at the line, the way he reads a defense, the way he catches guys with 12 men on the field and all that stuff. Is Peyton-esque. And then once the play starts, he turns into Patrick Mahomes. Like, I've always taken it personally when people are like, well, we haven't seen anyone do this, what Patrick Mahomes is doing. Yes, you have. You've watched Aaron Rodgers do this. Like, his ability is things only Patrick Mahomes has done. The little flick of the wrist, the rolling left and throwing back right, the sidearm, the stuff on the run. And he's not that guy necessarily today at the age 38 or 39, whatever he is right now. But he still has a lot of that left in him. The free plays, the offsides, the 12 men, the changing plays of the line, like all of these things, the deep balls, the tight windows. And then he has just his passion and attitude. He's angry. He has an attitude. He's a weirdo. I'm okay with all that. I fell in love with every aspect of it. And then he goes on McAfee. And this is because he's a weird dude. And it's obviously what was going to happen. It was going to be on McAfee. I said that a couple days before that it was going to be on McAfee. And this is going back a month now. But everyone, we're sitting at MLB Network and everyone's watching, and I had to walk out. I took my phone and watched it on my phone and left, because every single computer in kind of like this bullpen area where we sit around like the TV screens to watch the MLB games, every single person had it on. And I was like, I can't handle this. This is too much pressure. This is too much stress. Him rambling, his just dragging on and on. And I was like, I need to walk out. I knew right away though, even when he said that he intends on playing for the Jets. First, I mean, him talking about the anxiety I had when he's like, oh, 90-10 retirement. And everything he talked about was about the Packers. And he didn't talk about the Jets at all. He didn't, like, over-compliment the Jets. He just said, I made it clear my intentions were going to be to play for the Jets. But this is going to be a circus now. And this is what I wrote down. These are my notes from the time I said it's going to be a circus now, and it's going to be a circus. It's been a circus. He hasn't even been traded yet. We haven't heard from him yet. Who knows what's going to happen? He's not here. The only thing we saw, the closest thing we saw, is him and Alan Lazard working out together. Joe Douglas says at a news conference, or not even, at the WFAN party for Boomer and Greg, he goes, yeah, he's going to be here, which he probably shouldn't have said. It was in a drunken stupor he said it. Or I don't know if he was drunk, but definitely drinks were flowing that night. But everything Rodgers talked about in that McAfee show was about the Packers. He didn't talk about the Jets. And even if he does come this year, which I'll believe it when I see it, still, it's going to be a whole song and dance again next year. We're going to do this all over again. And I don't know if I can stomach that again. Oh, we heard back and forth is leverage. Jets have leverage. No, the Packers have leverage. He already said he's leaving. Yeah, but the Jets are desperate. They don't have any other choices. And just been too much. I've had enough of it. Everyone listening has probably had enough of it. I don't know. The only positive thing he said, which is kind of funny, the only positive thing he had to say about the Jets was about Nathaniel Hackett. So it didn't work for the Denver Broncos to bring in Nathaniel Hackett as the head coach. Actually did work for the New York Jets as the OC. So that's going to be interesting to that, see how that plays out. But look, he said, and also this was weird, where he goes, my intentions were to play for the Jets. And a lot of people are like, oh, he's not currently planning on playing for the Jets. I think I was just saying I made it clear on Friday that my intentions were to play for the Jets. He was talking in past tense, so that's fine. I'm not scared of that. But you know what I talked about with the Brooklyn Nets? I talked about the hired guns and everything they did and how it all fell apart. But if I'm the Nets, if I was a Nets fan, I'd do it all over again with Kevin Durant, with Kyrie Irving, with James Harden, everything they tried to do. I can't be a hypocrite. I will take this shot. This is the guy who I started this by saying how much I love Aaron Rodgers for a reason, to kind of set the stage to tell you that this is a guy who's special to me, but is a special athlete. And I want to see him in a Jets uniform, no matter what kind of crazy crap show and circus it'll be. I want to see what happens, because I think we have a shot. And you give up anything for that shot, even if it's your own sanity, because that's the point of this whole thing, is to try and get a shot to win one of these, right? So the Jets are trying to go for it. And do I have confidence that they'll get it done and he'll be a Jet? I don't even know. But every day that goes by, it's now been a month. Every day that goes by, it gets less and less likely that he will be a Jet. I don't see what the other alternative is for him. But what's worse is there's no alternative for the Jets. And now we're only a week and a half out from the draft. And you think it has to get done before the draft. Otherwise, you have to scrap the whole trade and start over. Right now, you think you have a framework of a trade. I love chaos, though. I have tickets as of right now to the Jets watch party, the Jets draft watch party at MetLife Stadium. I hope to be in the building. I hope he's not a Jet yet at that point, and I hope it's just chaotic. And I go into the building, and everyone's freaking out as, you know, the pick's getting closer and closer. Is he going to be a Jet? Is he not going to be a Jet? What's the trade going to look like? All that. Oh, I can't wait. Now you have the Quinn and Williams stuff hanging over your head, too, on top of it. I can't wait. This is going to be awesome. So with all that said, with everything that I just said, I take him over Lamar, and we'll talk about Lamar in a second. But with everything I just said, it would still be a dream to have Aaron Rodgers. It's a dream I've had since I was a little kid, since watching that Super Bowl and watching Aaron Rodgers for all the years after that. It's a dream that I had Rodgers playing on my team, and it's still only a dream because it hasn't happened yet, and I'll believe it when I see it. Daniel Jones, and I want to talk about Jalen Hurts, because Jalen Hurts got paid today $255 million over 5 years, $180 million of it guaranteed, and $110 million due at signing. We'll talk about Lamar in a second. But Daniel Jones gets $40 million, so it makes sense that Jalen Hurts is going to get a contract like this, right? This is $50-something million a year. But if Daniel Jones is worth $40, then obviously Jalen Hurts is worth $50-something. And I don't even think Daniel Jones is worth $40. I understand why you had to pay him that. And he's fine. He had one really good season where he was healthy. But the problem with that is Daniel Jones is the type of guy who can be really successful if you put a really good team around him. And if you're paying Daniel Jones $40 million, it's going to be hard to put a really good team around him. So good luck with that if you're the Giants. But the Eagles just set a new precedent. They just signed a guy at $180 million guaranteed. And apparently last summer, Lamar Jackson turned down $200 million guaranteed. I don't know if that's true. I said a couple weeks ago, look, they'll probably settle on a number that's about $170 million guaranteed. Now that you got to scrap that too. And just because he signed Odell Beckham Jr., who's washed, and it's what the Ravens love to do, they wait till the wide receiver is just about washed and then they sign him. But just because you signed Odell Beckham Jr. and he's at a strip club in Miami with Lamar Jackson, that doesn't mean that Lamar Jackson is going to take a bargain on his deal. That doesn't make this whole dispute between the organization and Lamar just suddenly magically go away. There's still going to be a contract negotiation. There's still going to be a dispute. So maybe he'll play on the franchise tag, but you're not any closer to signing Lamar Jackson to a long-term deal. And if you're the Ravens, why even bother? At this point, yeah, you're right. You did request a trade. Goodbye. We'll trade you and figure out what the trade is. I still think they trade him for Jared Goff. Why not? See what happens. See if Jared Goff can be successful with Lamar Jackson, or sorry, with Odell Beckham Jr. in that offense. But I don't understand. And by the way, I do that if I have the Lions too. I think now this is the highest you could possibly sell on Jared Goff. And I think Lamar Jackson is a special talent. And if you're the Lions, you haven't had a quarterback. You're much like the Jets. You haven't had that guy. Obviously, you had Stafford. So I guess you're even better. You're in a better situation than the Jets. But why not? You have a good young team. Get Lamar Jackson. Give him the guaranteed money. I could see them doing it. I could see Washington and their new ownership doing it. I don't know if the Ravens would trade him to Washington, but I could see that happening. But just because you signed Odell doesn't mean Lamar and all those issues go away. There's not a long-term contract on the horizon, and I don't know when it's going to get signed, but it just got a lot harder because of the Hurts contract, and it's something that I mentioned was going to happen earlier in the offseason, and the longer you wait, it's not getting any better. Herbert and Burrow up next. They're coming down the pike, and with those two franchises, it's not even about, wow, what's the deal's going to look like. It's who's going to screw this up more. Like with Herbert, is he worth the money? He hasn't won a playoff game. He blew up the only playoff game where he had a major lead in, right? So is LA just going to decide to give him, the Chargers going to decide to give him endless money and fully guaranteed money more than Jalen Hurts just got just because of the talent and the things that we can see him do, but we haven't seen it translate to wins yet? That's going to be interesting. And with Burrow, it's the opposite. Obviously, he has all the talent in the world, but we also see that he's capable of going out and winning games for you. But you have a notoriously cheap franchise that always screws things up in the Bengals. That's perpetually bad because of the decisions that they make. Do you actually trust that the Bengals are going to get it right? That they're going to give this guy, it's probably going to be $200 million guaranteed to keep him here at this point? I don't trust that the Bengals are going to do that. So my dream, talked about my dream as a Jet fan, and I always bring it back to me. The Jets, they have Aaron Rodgers for 1 year. Burrow plays incredibly this year. He doesn't get the contract extensions. Things get stale. They're forced to trade him. He sits out, doesn't play on the franchise tag. Boom, boom, boom. Jets get Joe Burrow after 1 year of Rodgers or 2 years of Rodgers, depending on how the Burrow thing shakes out. They get Joe Burrow and they give him a $250 million guaranteed contract. Or you know what? Give him the Mahomes contract. Give him $500 million for 15 years. Make $300 million of it guaranteed. $200 million, do it signing. Let's go. Let's get this wrapped up. You have your franchise quarterback for the next 50 years or 15 years, I should say, in Joe Burrow. All right. That's all I'm going to talk about football. But it's like I said, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, especially for Lamar Jackson. But do you have any confidence that he's going to be the first domino to fall? I don't. I want to talk about my career a little bit because I didn't record. I haven't recorded in a while. And sometimes I have to look inward and see, okay, why am I not recording? And I wanted to share a positive update. I wanted to come on here on this podcast and talk and just say that everything is going awesome and everything's really great and everything that I've been working on and doing is it feels like it's reaching its potential and it's getting to where I want it to be. But as of today, that's not the case. I did move and I'm really happy about that. I'm taking a chance. I'm taking a swing at this. I'm taking a swing at this opportunity. I started working for Major League Baseball, which is crazy. I sit around and watch baseball all day with friends and fun. And I'm in Studio 42 and I'm hanging out with Harold Reynolds and other former athletes and guys that I grew up watching on TV. And it's really cool. All that said, though, I moved here because I thought there would be more opportunities. And so far, it's been a little bit slow developing and trying to find those other opportunities. And at times, it's like, wow, I left a good situation at the radio and all that to come here, and it's not happening just yet. And I still have confidence, and I trust that it will, and I'm still working hard to get to where I want to be, and there's other opportunities on the horizon. I have a few things that are in play now. They haven't happened just yet, but hopefully they will. and they'll start to pan out soon. But I feel like part of the reason why I do this is because I want to leave a blueprint. Part of the reason why I want to record the podcast is because I want to not only leave a blueprint to the next person and try and pay it forward, but also look back at my own path, be able to come back and listen and chronicle what I've done. And how can I fairly do that if I don't mention some of the negatives too? Because there are bumps in the road. Not everything is positive. Not everything is smooth. There are things that are difficult. And I don't mean to get all serious on everyone and to kind of, if you're listening to this, bombard you with this. But not everything's rainbows and butterflies and roses and I don't know what else. There are positive things out there. There's some more difficult things. And there are some days where you doubt decisions that you've made, even life-changing huge decisions like moving to a new city. And that's okay. That's fine because that's part of it. And I understand that. And I go back and forth between understanding that and also understanding that, hey, you love what you're doing right now. You're sitting in Major League Baseball headquarters, which is why I'm not allowed to talk about baseball. I'm not allowed to gamble on baseball because I'm sitting in Major League Baseball headquarters. Yeah, it's not the dream job that I want, but I'm sitting and watching baseball and getting paid to do it and getting paid better than I got paid in Baltimore. And having an opportunity to try and learn and figure out in that building. It's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen in a day. I knew I was taking a step back and I'm kind of talking to myself and maybe talking to future me, but I'm also talking to everyone out there that is listening. I talk about BetterHelp all the time, that sometimes you got to just talk these things through and be like, hey, you know, certain things aren't happening right now. It doesn't have to happen right this instant. It doesn't have to change in a heartbeat. Life has mysterious ways of working. And even since I've moved here, I've had ups and downs with seeming like something was going to work out and then maybe it doesn't. And some things that were supposed to work out already are still up in the air and should have happened by now. And I wanted to wait to record a podcast where I can talk about all those great things and be like, hey, I'm doing this and this is what happened and I moved and this happened and that happened and it's going to be awesome. But right now, I can't talk about those things yet because they haven't happened yet. And I think they're going to happen. I trust and I'm confident that they will, but it hasn't happened just yet. And it would be unfair for me to just keep holding out and not talk about things. And I'm punishing myself by not doing what I love, which is recording this podcast and talking about sports and ultimately what I want to do. So why should I punish myself by not doing that, by not talking about those things? Just because I'm waiting for some fake positive update that I can't share with you guys that what's actually happening, that would be dishonest and unfair to myself and unfair to you guys. So that's the honest truth. That's the update. I'm incredibly blessed. I'm working for Major League Baseball. I'm happy. It's so much fun. And there's so many great things to talk about. And that's the career update, is all the good. There is so much positive. There's also other things that I'm still waiting on and I'm still working on. I can't wait to share with you guys when hopefully they happen soon. It's a really fun time to be in New York, to be around this state and the playoffs with all these teams in the playoffs. I go to work every day with a bunch of Knicks fans and Islander fans and a lot of Devils fans, which is going to be so annoying as they play my Rangers in the first round starting tomorrow night. It's going to be a lot of Devils fans. I'm going to be in the office for a lot of these games. And it's going to be Rangers and Devils fans going at it. It's going to be fun. It's going to be crazy. It's going to be hectic. And I can't wait. I'm excited. And I just wanted to, I wanted to share all that on the episode. I hope that was kind of coherent. Hopefully there's more to come and I'll do my full career episode one day soon when I have a little bit more of a concrete update. But until then, thank you all for listening. I'm going to try and keep coming back with more episodes and talking sports when I'm available, and sharing updates when I can. So until then, thank you all. Appreciate you all for listening. Please, if you like it, share it. Share it with a friend. If you think this little soliloquy that I just went on can be helpful for someone else, share that with someone else because it's important. It's part of the journey. And until next time, I appreciate you all. See ya. You were the best nights of my life. You got the light that always shines. I miss the way that you move and the way I get high when you take me to your heights, like I'm standing in the sky. I see your subway cars and your old graffiti. I
breathe your air when I land in another city. I'll be that one that's got you printed on my bones. Yeah, you're all I know. Everywhere I go, oh, I change it all. Oh, oh, always on my road. Drive down Riverside, see the birds flying on the high line. With the sidewalks burning, we pray for rain in July. I want the Yankees 99, yeah. And the Knicks on a sold out night. When the curtains close and the Broadway streets are alive, hey. I need your heartbeat close, don't you ever leave me. And I breathe your air when I land in another city. And I'll be that one that's got you printed on my bones. Yeah, you're all I know. Everywhere I go, oh, I change it up, oh, oh, always on my own.
I was God sent. I used to hit them courts yard in Prospect. Take them long walks on my time spent. Just a kid with that empire state of mindset. Kick flipping off a blind deck. Dipping from the New York City's finest. Yeah, said I've been up on my New York shit. Walking down the block with my New York bitch. I can never leave my city, ain't nothing like it. Even if I do though, I can never hide it. Top down on the west side when I'm driving. East side be the only side that I'm riding. I'm still New York.
I'm still New York.